Splash Weather Repel Premium Windshield Wash features a 3-in-1 formula that repels rain, sleet, snow, and bugs while leaving a streak-free shine. It keeps you seeing safely all year long. Pick up some at Walmart today.
See safely on the road when you apply a little splash.
Dad Bod Rap Pod, we're doing our best to hang together, as is everyone. Got a little intro segment here. My name is Nate LeBlanc. I'm the producer and co-host of Dad Bod Rap Pod. I'm coming to you on behalf of Damone Carter, our co-host, MC Dem One, who couldn't be here today. And I've got a little segment here where I'm talking to David Ma, internationally renowned hip-hop writer and co-host and booker of the show. And we're going to get into it. Dad Bod Rap Pod, Shelter in Place Edition. Little weird this week, not going to lie. Everyone is going through it right now. We, our personal lives, not excluded. We've all got a lot going on, but we're excited to bring you this show. And for the first time ever, I have Dave on the phone. Dave, what's going on?
Yo, call me Dave Elect Quarantine.
Dave Elect Horny Fiend.
What's going on, man? I'm all right, man. I guess, you know, I think everybody's going through it right now. So shout out to, you know, to all the healthcare workers, delivery drivers, supermarket workers, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. I just profusely thanked the mailman for bringing my cat's litter. Yes. I was just like, thank you so much for doing what you're doing. And he kind of gave me the, oh, yeah, sure. And I'm like, no, really? You want a water? Like,
right.
It's amazing is on the front lines right now.
Right.
The grocery store people. I'm just like, I never thought that would be the case, but here we are.
Totally. I go to the Safeway by my place, and there's this one butcher who, like, I kind of think is a douchebag, but we gave each other like a sympathetic look today, and I was like, okay, I feel for you, buddy.
Totally. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, things are okay. I mean, I do find a little bit of comfort that everybody's kind of going through it together, even though in their different ways. And so it's good to be on the phone with you, man.
Yeah,
We're missing Damone right now.
I know for sure. Damone is out there. I will try to catch up with him. If not for this episode, then for one that's coming up very soon. And we'll just try to keep the natural rhythm of the show as intact as possible. And let's talk about a little bit of music. I know you haven't had a ton of time to listen to music, but let's talk about the JLEC a little bit.
Yes.
What are your overall thoughts and impressions?
A few overall thoughts is, well, firstly, all the people who are hating on it, it's like, you're not going to hear rappers rap better than that. So relax.
Yeah. It does seem to be a little bit misplaced, but perhaps it would be impossible for some people to live up to the amount of hype that they had put on this for themselves.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I can't think of another time where like a rapper without an album has had this much hype. I mean, unless if I was young around the time Nas was about to drop or
right.
something, but
Nas,
I mean,
knew, but those were kind of different because they just worked steadily through. They did
right.
their crazy guest appearances and singles, and then they dropped these amazing albums. So
agreed,
this is like when like his crazy run was like 10 years ago.
It was. It's crazy.
That
and
makes
you know,
me
so,
feel old as fuck, but here we
yeah.
are.
The only other person I could kind of align with this would maybe be Andre. You know, if Andre,
right.
people were waiting
if Andre
for Andre
now
solo.
Dropped the flute album.
Right, right. But other than that, I mean, there's no way that this album's going to live up to the hype. But I think the rapping's incredible. Yeah. I like the somber feel of it. I read online that some people were saying Jay-Z's been listening to a lot of Makami, so I think that's kind of funny.
Yeah, apparently there's a track coming with
it's
an Alchemist and Mock track that Jay-Z's going to feature on, which is going to like this will be the first time so many people hear of Mock if this ends up
right.
actually happening. So it's pretty
that's
crazy,
kind of
man.
Ridiculous. That's
so,
going to be ridiculous. It's
yeah,
good for Jay-Z
I
to
want
have
that
a...
for him. I want that for them. Like
right.
the fact that Alk has a placement on here is fucking amazing. Like it's dope.
Totally. And Kurongbin? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, I guess they sampled enough of the Kurongbin track that it's credited as a like a writing or a feature.
Got it.
Produced by, I guess I should say.
I was just picturing Jay-Z in the Kurongbin wig. So,
a couple of months ago, Damone referred to them, and I can't remember if it was on mic or off, as crew banging. And now I can't see anything else when I look at their name, and I actually wish that was their name. That's such
totally.
A dope name.
That's a Damone Freudian slip right there. Shout out to
the whole
Damone.
Crew banging. what's it called? My thoughts so far are it's very good. I'm enjoying listening to it. It's rewarding multiple listens, which is just kind of rare these days. It's very odd to have dropped when it dropped. Like our buddy Curly Castro and his partner in Ryan Premrock, who we hope to talk to someday, dropped Shrapnel on the same day, and we had like previewed tracks from that, and like I'm really enjoying that album as well. But like it, you know, no offense to them, but it's not quite the cultural phenomenon that that J Electronica was. So you've got all these memes and things of like. You know, Jay's like, of course he waited till it was a pandemic, like, to drop the album. Like, is this a Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse situation? Like, it's
That's
just
hilarious.
So, it adds to the mystique in such an interesting
right.
way. But, as music, I think it's very, very well done. The part I wanted to kind of quibble on, and I think you might probably agree with this, is he said he made the album in these 40 days and 40 nights, which again, biblical shit, like so crazy that he built that, and perhaps by setting those parameters it allowed him to actually finish
right
and to
right,
only do half
right.
of the rapping basically
yes
perhaps as well, which I don't hold against him in any way. It's like however it takes to get the art into the world, like that's great.
Totally.
If Jay-Z wanted to come in and take Damone's spot for the week, we would take him, you know what I mean?
Right.
Probably make us push the episode out a little faster, but anyway,
right.
Including Shiny Suit Theory kind of takes away from that for me. Obviously,
agreed.
That wasn't made in the last 40 days and 40 nights, so it's just an
odd
choice.
I was just going to say that. Right, 40 days, 40 nights, and one track from 10 years ago.
Right.
Yeah. So I mean, so that was a bit strange, and like. You know, I think all listeners were like, is Jay going to throw on a Lucy from years ago? And of course he did. And it's like,
right.
God damn it, dude.
Totally. That's just him. People... That's just how he is. Right. It's
right.
Like he's so interesting. And I don't know if you've been watching this, but he's like going after anyone who has anything to say on it on Twitter. Like,
I know.
Fascinating.
I'm with that. I mean, he is on some next level shit when he's like, you know, I got Jay-Z on my first album. That's Highway Robbery. I mean, who else can say that?
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Who else can say that? And for what it is, and back to your point about it, just as music, I mean, of course it's going to, like, it's necessitate multiple listens because, I mean, these guys are writers, you know what I mean?
Totally.
It's really good to, it's really good to have to rewind some bars and, you know, just hip hop in general. I'm like, dude, where are you at? There's Italian guys singing off balconies. I can't even get a good freestyle. I mean, what's going on?
Totally. Yeah. It's actually interesting. We follow quite a few MCs on the podcast's IG, and there have been seemingly an uptick in people going live. You know how you get that weird notification at the top?
Yes.
And I always
yes.
like dismiss it, and I actually was looking for how to turn it off the other day. Maybe that's Same. What they're doing.
I
don't think they're doing balconies. I think they're doing like Instagram, but I could be wrong. And maybe they're just asking for donations or like trying to move merch. Like, and that's all valid right now too. Like
100%.
Desperate times, desperate measures. You know, I'm a social isolator by nature, so working from home has been a little interesting, but basically my evenings are exactly the same. Like I'm very glad I invested in physical media. I have a lot of books. I have a lot of records.
Right.
I have DVDs. Like, not that the internet has been out or anything, but it has been kind of shitty for us. Has it been for you?
It has.
I think
it has.
Everyone's home using it constantly. It's like
right. It's
taking up all the bandwidth. But anyway.
Right. Well, it's kind of like how the canals in Italy are like clearer now.
And isn't that crazy? Yeah, that is one of the craziest things to emerge from this. It's almost like we're the problem.
Well, I mean, without getting too deep into it, I feel like, you know, pandemics and things are like a nature's population control anyways, to a certain extent. And so, you know, obviously if it represses, you know, what the footprint that we leave on the earth, like things like beautiful dolphins are going to emerge and rainbows, you know, I don't know.
Totally.
I
hear that. I have to give a shout out to friend of the program, Sun Ra, who said this is the future that 90s like apocalyptic rap was preparing us for. It's like we're inside of a Jedi Mind Tricks album right now, essentially.
That's hilarious.
And I have to say, it fucking sucks. Like,
I know. I should have gotten some machetes off eBay.
Exactly. That would have been the future Tretch was preparing you for.
Poverty's Paradise, I believe it's called.
Maybe soon.
I know. How are you holding up? And you mentioned books and tactile media. What are you listening to?
Yeah, great question. Thank you. Generally speaking, in like times of distress, I don't really turn to rap. Like, I have been listening to the JLEC and the Shrapnel. I'm actually listening, and I know this isn't answering your question because I was
talking
about records, but I'm finally finishing, not finally, but they just put out the final episode of Infamous, the Tekashi 6ix9ine thing that our buddy Sean Sotero wrote on Spotify. And I've been like enthralled with that. Like, it's like I've had that on a bunch. And it's very, very well done. And it's actually interesting to listen to it through this lens because it's like, you know, I have some issues going on and like life is kind of hard right now, but at least I'm not this fucking stupid.
100%.
It's just 100%. Like everyone involved in that scenario is a crazy person. So it's that's been fascinating. But yeah, man, I tend to go to like the kind of softer indie rock, classic rock, like kind of like comfort food of music. So yeah, it's like it's not really about exploring and listening to a bunch of new stuff. It's like about listening to like my kind of like personal classics.
Of course.
Yeah,
I've been going back to you know, my soul food is soul music. So yeah. I've been checking, you know, I've been just putting on 45s and records and just enjoying, you know, getting up and flipping the record, things like that.
Totally. It's like sometimes in the normal course of life, you feel like you don't have time for it. And it's like, yeah, no, I do.
Right. I have time for it. Yeah. And I'm going to relish that. And, you know, like, even though you and I had a conversation off air just about, you know, the realities that are emerging. I mean, you know, end of the day, like, we have shelter and food and I'm super grateful for that.
Yep. Same. Yeah. And, you know, a partner who I love and can stand to be in the same small apartment with for many, many hours in a row. I'm very grateful. for all of that. And I realize there are people out there hurting. So I'm really lucky to be in the position that I'm in. I have been calling my parents a ton. I just check in every day.
Hey, same.
Yeah.
Same. My partner and I dropped off groceries to our parents, and you know, it felt good, you know, to do.
Totally. Are you watching anything, or did you watch anything that kind of surprised you? Or are you like, oh fuck it, let's watch, like, I'm watching Demolition Man for like the 18th time, but I'm like, it's like, I need a dumb thing I don't have to think about. Well, and it's actually about a world without toilet paper, so it's having some resonance.
That's hilarious. Actually, fucking Outbreak the other day, just like every other crony in the world.
Yes,
you know,
it's so interesting that Netflix instituted that chart system where you can see what other people are watching in a small way. That, like, the top 10 in the world, top 10 in the U.S. thing. Outbreak has been in the middle of the pack the whole time, which is fascinating.
Totally. Well, you know, I think it ties into like reality TV / reality raps. Perhaps you want a lifeline to what's going on.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? So, even if it's fiction.
Yeah. Did you end up listening to the Shrapnel or the Rap Ferreira at all?
I listened to the Rap Ferreira. That is, again, this is coming from somebody who isn't as staunch of a listener as you are. Maybe my favorite album of his. And I say that as someone, again, who's not super deep on it. But I've heard everything at least once.
Yeah.
What stands out to me on this one is the production.
For sure.
So I love the beats on this. I forgot which number or what the name of the track is, but I would say like the first third of the album, like, I love all those beats. I'm going to look up to see who produced those all, and you know.
Yeah, it's the Jefferson Park Boys, which is Kenny Siegel, Mike Parvizi, who is, I believe, from Penthouse.
Okay.
But this is like totally different from that. And then the other guy's name is Mr. Carmack, and I think he's the bass player. Guys,
gotcha.
Pardon me, I don't have that information in front of me. That's just what I think it is.
Okay.
They're kind of operating as kind of like a hip hop jazz trio backing Rory.
So it's much more free. So the songs are produced by them as a unit.
That's how I understand it, yes. It's credited.
Oh, cool,
like
cool.
That. Yeah.
Oh, dope. Well, you know, we've had Kenny on the show. We should get the other two cats on as well.
Totally. Would love that. It's actually funny. You know, there was a time where we weren't really talking about the show at all. We had this, like, stash of cool interviews, and you're going to hear one in a minute. Or two, actually. And we were just like, what do we do? And then it was like, well, it's probably actually going to be a really good time for podcasts because, A, people are home and or working from home and, like, need stuff to listen to. B, it would be really hard for someone to say they have an excuse to why they didn't want to do a phone interview.
Well, I'm in full agreement with the first part. I think entertainment will spike given all the free time, but man, it's hard to get rappers on the phone when they're busy, and it's hard to get them. It's even harder when they're not busy, dude.
Oh, that's interesting. So, is this like your knowledge from trying to book us during the holidays?
Yes. I was chasing Ghostface for about 15 years. So,
yeah, totally.
Yeah. Fingers crossed. We have some things in the pipeline, and, just sort of in that regard, shout out to listeners who are checking us out right now, because it's like, we don't lie when we're talking about the community feel of the show. And just the fact that if we can bring comfort to anybody, and the fact that they're listening is comforting to us. So thank you for that.
Straight up. Well said, Dave. Check out the Shrapnel. Let's talk about that next time.
We'll do.
And we are going to get into this interview. We've got Count Bass D. Tell the people what it was like in the room when we were talking to Count Bass.
Oh, man. Count Bass, look, I mean, he is one of those guys. Firstly, my introduction to him is the Dwight Spitz album. And I know that he had work before that and certainly has had tons of work after that. A lot of my favorite stuff from him is off of the Dwight Spitz album, collaborations with Edon, collaborations with MF Doom. He has a song where he talks about where the hook is, I'm not Doom's brother, but I rock a subwoofer. And that ties into the interview that you guys are going to hear, where he gets really personal with everything. He talks from the perspective of an OG who's still learning, though, in a strange way. He's jaded, but like wise off of it. And it was really great to just be in the room and listening to him.
Yeah, we had two tremendous interviews the day that we talked to Count Bass, and I honestly can't even remember what the other one was right now, but it doesn't matter because we're going to get into this.
It was a certain slug up from Atmosphere.
Oh, yeah. It's so funny, dude. Obviously, that was a big episode for us, and we really appreciate you guys for listening to that. That now feels like it took place in a different world.
It essentially did, right? Yeah. I mean, we have mandates coming in every hour, and
totally.
these new decrees.
When we talked to Slug, I used to be able to leave my house. Now I cannot.
Right. I had more sanitizer.
Makes me feel sluggish.
Nice.
Ah. All right, bud. I'm gonna let you go. Really nice to talk to you.
Likewise.
All right.
I'll see you on the DM tip for sure.
Yeah, for sure. We'll be chatting. And now you know, Damone will actually get to hear the show all put together for the first time, which I don't know if he's had the opportunity to do that. I guess he was sick once, but and you'll get to hear the way everything is paced if you take the time to listen to it.
Well, dude, I mean, off air as well. Well, thanks for keeping this going because I know this is like weird times for everyone. So,
I'm happy to do it. It's good to have a project, and everything was going so good. Keep it moving.
Dude, times out by 1,000 of all the other components of my life, I'm like, everything is derailed, dude.
Yep. Everything is totally different now. We're in a brand new world, and no one knows what is going to happen or how to navigate it, which is, I think it's going to create a lot of opportunity in the long run, but in the short run, it is extremely anxiety-causing.
100%.
I'm trying not to get depressed. My spirits have been pretty high, but today has been a little low, so I'm glad to have you on, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to make this more like a normal segment rather than me doing my apocalyptic
radio show. Totally. Thanks for doing that, bud.
Absolutely. Okay, I'll talk to you soon.
All right, man.
Peace.
Bye.
All right, enough preamble. Let's hear this interview with Count Bass D.
Dad Bod Rap Pod, another dope interview for you guys today. On the line, we have Count Bass D. Where are you at right now?
I live in Pennsylvania, in Penns Valley, like in Center County, right where, pretty close to Penn State University.
Okay. Oh, interesting. Okay. Well, thanks for coming on the program. You've had a long, long, multi-decade career. Can you talk a little bit about how you got started? Like, how did you get in the game?
Well, yeah, I got in the music game first. You know, like the rap thing was an afterthought to me. I started playing instruments in my father's church when I was like 4 years old, and I was born in 73. So, you know, my life has been going parallel to hip hop the entire time. Mm-hmm. So. Every year that hip hop grew, I grew. And so by the time I was about 19 is when I got my first record contract from Pete Nice, from Third Base. I was signed to Hoppo with Curious. It was me and Curious were on the same label.
Okay.
And that's how my affiliation with that whole crew started was because Pete Nice signed me when I was like 19. And then by the time I turned 20, I made my first album. And then, but it didn't come out, even though it was reviewed in The Source like 25 years ago this month in March when Slick Rick was still in jail.
Wow.
Yeah, that's when my first album was done.
That's a bar right there. Wow.
Yeah. So, but they didn't put the album out until September. So September will be my 25th year in stores.
Damn.
Dope.
That's
dope.
Crazy.
You know, you mentioned a little bit about you starting off in the church, and your production has a lot of musicality to it. Can, what producers would you say have influenced your music most?
Well, as far as rap production, you know, there's like, I'd say, you know, there's a lot of people who I enjoy and everything, mm-hmm. but the people whose style was I crafted myself after, I'd say, when I think about it, it's probably Shock G.
Yeah.
So because when I heard I Get Around, that was the first time that I heard chords and samples in the correct pitch used, and that's when I said to myself, you see, that's what it's supposed to sound like. And I just kind of moved forward in that zone, you know, as far as trying to make sure that my samples were always in tune, mm-hmm. that the chords and the things that I added always were to complement the samples and not to depend on samples to do anything for me.
Dope.
On that note, you guys kind of had like an interesting Twitter back and forth. I was wondering if the Tyler the Creator thing was fresh on your mind, that the fact that you inspired him, and that in some ways you guys share kind of an interesting sense of musicality that you bring to your music. Was that surprising to you, or?
Well, I've been waiting for it. You know what I mean? It's been 20. Okay. I mean, it's been 25 years, and there's never been another rapper to play an instrument like this. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
I've been waiting for it. And I knew after a while, I figured it was going to have to be the next generation that was going to be the ones to kind of, you know, pick up where Pre-Life Crisis even left off. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm grateful for it. I'm really grateful for the fact that you know, it was him, because he came at me so humble and respectful, and he's not like that. He's really a sarcastic right. Tongue-in-cheek kind of guy, so it really kind of, you know, rocked me a little bit, because I'm thinking to myself, like, wow, you know, like, this guy is really coming at to me in a reserve kind of posture, and I've never seen him like that with anybody.
Yeah.
You know, except maybe Doom, when he, you know what I mean?
Yes.
So right. It was a blessing, man, to be honest with you, man. This whole thing has just been a huge blessing for me.
That's awesome.
You know what I mean? Making music like this, straight up.
So I, in doing my research for the interview, I listened to Pre-Life Crisis again. I probably hadn't heard it in quite a while. And the thing that struck me was the your story rap about when TLC and you were in the same room. And T-Boz tried to talk to you, and they just don't make songs like that anymore. So I don't really have a question. I just kind of wanted to say, like, I really, really enjoyed listening to the record and that song in particular. And there was such a looseness and a personality that shone through in the music that I got very nostalgic for when music used to be fun, essentially.
Yeah, it's wild, because you know, I didn't really know what the heck I was doing at that time. You know, I was only 20 when I made the record,
right?
And you know, it's wild, you know, seeing like Pop Smoke die at 20. I'm thinking to myself, like, what if that was my only record, man?
Right,
you know what I mean?
Right,
like, wow. I've gone on to do over 30 small projects after. It's like, man, imagine if I passed away at 20 years old. So I'm grateful to just really still just be here, number one. Number two is, like, as far as with that song, it was just, man, you know, that was the time when you're writing your first album, you're not really knowing that it's going to come out.
Right.
So you're writing for yourself, and without getting the reaction of an audience yet, you really don't know. So the freedom is there. So that's why you notice, like, after people make their first album, you know, the second album, the third album, the subject matter tends to get a lot more conservative, because, you know, you've had to walk a mile in your lyrics. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, you know, after a while, you can kind of get gun shy. That's what took me so long with this CBD record, is because, you know, in the climate of the way that, you know, people take things, you know, we don't really get a chance to just be free and just use our creativity anymore. You know, I remember Lil Wayne getting really a lot of backlash for an Emmett Till line and stuff. And when I think about, like, Common's first album and other, we just were trying to be ill. You know, that was like the word was just, we just being ill. You didn't take it seriously, you know? It wasn't like it's just wordplay. We're playing around with words. And it got to the point, it's gotten to the point where, you know, people are talking about lyrics being whack. It's because everyone's gun shy. Nobody really wants to say anything, you know? Yes. We're all gun shy. So you have to fall.
I've never thought about it that way before.
Every lyric you write, you have to be willing to bet your career on it, you know? And that's what it was like with this new album. I said to myself, well, man, I just don't care. I just don't care. I'm going to say whatever. I'm going to say whatever I feel like saying. And that's it. Whoever, come what may. You know what I mean? Come what may.
Dope. You had mentioned, speaking of MF Doom, you know, we would be remiss on the Dad Bod Rap Pod if we didn't talk about him. Can you talk a little bit about your guys' working relationship and just, you know, the collaborative efforts that you guys have done together?
Sure. I came in contact, as I was saying, with Doom around the time that I signed with Pete Nice. Okay. And I think he just kind of put me and my talents on a back burner. Think, you know, he's the kind of guy, he'll see something that you can do and he'll just kind of put it in his memory bank to say, you know, if a situation comes up where I could possibly need this person, you know, I'll know to give him a call. And I think that happened when he was working on a project for Grimm. And that's when he, you know, some people got in contact with me saying that, you know, MF Doom was looking for me. And, you know, at the time it was just Doom. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, but I didn't really, it was a time where I kind of checked out of the whole rap scene for a while after I got dropped from Columbia. Mm-hmm. And so I just, you know, I was working at a dry cleaner. I was doing my thing, but I didn't really plan on putting music out. And it wasn't until after I put out a couple 12-inches, I started working with Egon, Ethan mm-hmm. from Madlib's manager, and mm-hmm. you know the bulwark of Stone's Throw, mm-hmm. You know, the golden era of Stone's Throw. And he had a video show together for 4 years. And then after that, it was when I kind of got contacted by some people representing Doom, mm-hmm. saying he needed me to do this remix and that he would be willing to trade like a verse for me or something. But you know, he at this time he's doing the fondling thing and whatnot, and I'm paying no attention, none of that. You know what I mean? I'm serious. I'm not paying attention to nothing that's going on. I don't know nothing about Funk Crusher Plus. I don't know nothing about nothing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I just kind of just jumped back in there, and it wasn't until I did the remix. And so, you know, he invited me to come to his house. So I come down there and, you know, as soon as I walk in the door, the first thing he said to me was like, yo, man, you remind me of my brother. Wow. And wow. I was like, you know, I had my man DJ Pocket with me, you know, praise God for a witness. And because, you know, this story sounds unbelievable, but we go downstairs and then so he's looking at me like, all right, man, you know, I guess we got to do this stinking song, you know what I mean? Like, you know, like, what's the subject matter? I'm like, there's no subject. I don't participate in none of that. You know what I mean? We just get the wreck and we go. And he was like, what? I said, what? He's like, okay. So that's how that happened. He just was ecstatic at the fact that I wasn't going to come at him with kind of corny concept or something like that. And I think we just kind of forged a bond at that time. And I think I kind of filled in a little bit of, I'm not saying like I filled in for his brother, but I think it was just kind of a familiar place for him for like 6 years after that. You know, I did some touring and, you know, DJing for him, you know, with the Nokia Theater. And we did some big, big, big concerts and stuff like that. And, man, he taught me, he really was the PhD for my rap chops, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And after that, it was just, I noticed that I, at that point, that what he gave me was so authentic and was so it was so powerful that it just changed everything. It changed the way everybody looked at me after that. Because if you look at even the Source article, you know, they were just talking about me like I was just visiting hip hop. You know, like I was Greg Osby or Us Three or one of those people. So nobody really had nobody. You know, you got to. This Count Basie that everybody knows now, back then I was just this jazz prodigy people used to throw around that was visiting hip-hop. I was a guest in hip-hop at that time, you know? And, you know, it was Dwight Spitz, you know, me getting with Doom and making that album that made everybody understand that I wasn't playing games, that I was legitimate. You know, I knew my breaks, you know, I chopped my drums. This just wasn't no sample pack business.
Right.
So when it came time, so Dwight, with CBD, with this new album, I'm in the same position. You know, I feel like there's a lot of these guys from the 90s, who act like I wasn't in the source, who act like I didn't go to How Can I Be Down, who act like I wasn't at these conventions looking at them.
Right.
And, you know, and it was like back then, it's like anything that you was doing that was outside of Timberland boots and camouflage was out of pocket. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I knew that's all a lot of those guys had. And I knew they wouldn't be around for longer than two or three albums, you know? I'm serious. I'm talking crazy, but it's the truth. I'm not saying anything nuts. If you look at that issue with the source, and you look at everybody that's in it, you know, Big L, God bless the dead. You know, we had the same A&R, but outside of him, nobody else that I see that was reviewed the same time, you know, is making records right now. So, I knew that back then. I knew that I had the musicianship that was going to keep me around and keep it interesting for a while. But I hoped, you know what I mean? But I have to say that if it wasn't for meeting the villain and him getting me right, who knows? I might have still been dancing around freestyling, trying to figure out what my role was going to be in this thing. But, man, the foundation that guy gave me is just, you know, just a few short things, man. You know, the half the story about that guy hasn't even begun to be told. Most of the information out about him is not even accurate.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's like his birthday. Every year people talking about his birthday. And I just like to, you know, shout out to the wrong day. You know what I'm saying? Fully.
But that's the way the villain wants it. Right.
Yeah. I mean, well, you know, I tell people a lot of times, like, until you get a Wikipedia page yourself, you don't really understand and can't see all the inaccuracies and all the other ones.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? That's kind of how it is with that and whatever.
Okay. So you got the new record coming out, CBD.
Great title, by the
way. Yes.
Oh, thank you.
Well, okay.
Thank you.
And you mentioned that, you know, you're kind of taking the gloves off for this one. You're going all the way in. What can listeners expect from this record?
Really not much more than just beats, rhymes, in my opinion.
Okay.
Okay.
You know, for real, it's not even really it's a straight ahead, you know, it's as if Herbie Hancock just did a straight ahead bebop record, man. It's like nothing crazy, you know what I mean? That's why the cover of it, I'm sitting in front of a bunch of records and I'm holding my drum machine.
Okay.
Because I just wanted people to understand that, you know, that's what you're going to be hearing. It's not going to be a lot of instruments. And I'm not even sure if I played any instruments on this record. I think it's just all samples. And yeah, it's just all samples and rhymes.
You know what I mean? That is so
dope. Sometimes, well, it's just sometimes, like I said, these people will get it confused and think that, wow, you know, Count Bass, you know, but nah, man, you know, sometimes you have to just put it in their mouth and let them know that you're not playing games, man. And I'm serious. Like this time it was just one of those things where it was, I mean, that's the same thing I had on me when I did Dwight Spitz.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I felt like I made the first album and I was really trying to make that album. I mean, it wasn't intentional that I played instruments on it. You know, the guy who was producing for me at the time, you know, was on strike or, you know, just couldn't really make it.
Right.
And so I had to make that album like that because to save my record deal, you know.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It wasn't intentional to play instruments on my first album. My whole demo tape was all samples and raps. That's how I got signed. So that the record company was looking at me like, what's this?
Yeah.
You know, but it was out of necessity that I had to make that album that way. You know, so then, you know, the second album, I was suicidal and I thought that was going to be my last album. So I leaned out and did a lot of songwriting and tried to really just show all my chops before I took my life, really, to be honest with you.
Whoa.
And then I chose not to do so, you know, slapped myself around a little bit, got my mind together, did a couple of 12 inches and, you know, was doing the show with Egon And I still felt like these people think I'm playing. You know, they think this is some sort of a joke. So that's why I set out to do Dwight Spitz after I did a compilation with Mike Nardone on his thing. And after that, I said, I'm going to go ahead and do a whole album like this, you know, of just straight ahead, you know, just beats and rhymes. And that's how Dwight Spitz came. But it was to show these guys that I wasn't playing games and that, you know, you're not just going to talk around me and talk over me like, you know, I'm just some dude that plays instruments. You know what I mean? You can get it on these samples, too. You know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? And that was the angst that I had, you know. Yeah. And then, of course, Doom put the battery in my back, and then I kept going from there.
Yeah, wow, so that kind of energy, you're bringing it on CBD. When does it hit stores, or is it out already?
It comes out Friday.
Okay, great.
13th. Yeah, it comes out this Friday the 13th, and
shit.
You know, so far it's been available for pre-ad on Apple Music. So I've been putting a single out every Friday for the last couple of weeks, and but yeah, it's a short project. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. My intentions with it was, I want to make sure that it can be listened to realistically in one sitting. I'm not talking about that old half thing, because I saw how people did The Irishman. I saw the Irishman in the theater, I drove, I was on tour, and I saw it before a concert, and I sat in there and I saw the whole movie, left, then I went, and then after it came out like the following week, and I watched it, and I started talking to people about it, and I guess they didn't get an opportunity to find a theater. And people are telling me, such and such, and I had to do this, I had to do that. I'm thinking to myself, like, wow, man, Scorsese, you know what I mean? And that kind of lineup, and you can't dedicate a little time?
Right.
Right.
You're going to treat it like a miniseries when he expressly says he doesn't want you to?
Well, and that's what I'm saying. It's like, so I knew my album wasn't going to be able to get listened to anymore. So I said, you know what, I'm going to make a piece that somebody can digest in a commute.
Yeah,
and we'll want to listen to twice or three times. I'm not gonna just make this thing, you know, 50, you know, 60 minutes just to make it 60 minutes. I'm gonna make this thing 20 minutes.
Okay,
but I'm gonna make it a serious 20 minutes. Okay, you know, I'm gonna try to make it as fierce as possible. No wasted time.
I love how hungry you sound, and I cannot wait to listen to this record. I'm gonna like stay up till Friday midnight to listen to it now. We've talked so much about how like short albums are the wave now, but we've never actually had anyone explain why quite how you just did. So I really appreciate that. And like, I have to admit, I'm part of the problem. I much prefer 7 hot tracks to 19 tracks with filler, with skits, with other things these days. I'm just like, my brain is corroding because of the internet, and I don't have time for anything, supposedly.
I agree.
So, that's a really, really cool explanation. And, yeah, I just cannot wait to hear this record.
Yeah.
Thank you. I mean, I still feel just as hard. I mean, honestly, it feels like my first album. I know that sounds like hogwash and something just for an interview, man, but you can't, a guy like me who's still here after 25 years this,
hell yeah,
you can't continue to keep doing this without some kind of serious passion for it. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's a narcissistic exercise, and you got your boy Nas said, listen, when it's real, you're doing this with or without a contract, and he and I had the same A&R for that album too. You know what I mean? Wow. So here I am signed to Columbia while Illmatic is coming out.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Wow.
Big L is next to me. You know what I mean? And I'm here, you know what I mean, with this album, this 20-year-old playing all these instruments live. There's no Pro Tools.
Wow.
Right. And here we are, you know, now, you know, 25 years later. So I still got an axe to grind, Jack. You know what I'm saying?
That is so
dope. I'm serious. I'm dead serious.
Yeah, you know, we can hear it.
Hell yeah, man.
Yeah, we do a lot of interviews, and very few of them are coming with this level of passion and commitment. Yeah, so I'm all about it.
Man, this is not a play thing to me, man. Music has been my life. as long as I can remember, it has saved my life on numerous occasions, man. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It is my Zoloft. It is everything. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, man.
And you know, without it, I'm absolutely nothing, man. There's no purpose for me on this earth without this music. So, you know, I knew this. You know, and I watched the other people around me who was able to do their networking thing. And, you know, you put their little things together to make sure that they got prime spots. But, man, I feel sorry for them this year because ain't no music conference, ain't no South by Southwest. You know, so folk gonna have to actually get in the trenches and make some music this year.
Oh,
that's where I lick my chops and rub my hands together.
Oh, you know,
man. That's all I got.
I'm going to go run through a brick wall. Can you hold on for a second?
Yeah, this wow.
It's like the best coach speech I've ever heard. This is amazing.
Well, we wow. So Count Base D CBD available Friday, March 13th while you're in quarantine. Slap it. We really really appreciate you coming on the program, man. Thank you so much.
Thank you all for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Peace,
all right.
Man.
Thank you.
Be well.
All right, peace.
Next up, we've got an interview with Plattern, DJ Plattern, and Edgewise. They're a duo who just released their debut EP. It's called Apatheater. All the music besides our theme song, Pyramid, by DJ Albert Jenkins, that you heard on the pod today are the backing tracks from the Apatheater EP produced by DJ Plattern. And at the very end of the episode, I'm going to play a full version of their song, Yada Yada. DJ Plattern and Edgewise are friends of ours. As you're going to hear, it's a pretty loose conversation. DJ Plattern, longtime fixture in the Bay Area DJ scene, deep record collector. Just full disclosure, this project is out on the label that Dave works for, Needle to the Groove Records. That's, you guys probably recognize the term Needle to the Groove. We record often in the record store. That's one component of the Empire. We're at home now for obvious reasons, but you guys have probably heard us shout them out before. It's an important part of our friend group, and we're very proud to be affiliated with them. So DJ Plattern did another great project on Needle to the Groove that's well worth checking out. It's called Breaking the Ice. It's a mix of all Icelandic music. Luke, DJ Plattern, is an Icelandic person, and just the story is amazing. Dave wrote the liner notes. It's some of his best work ever. There's still physical CDs available, and it's on streaming services. Highly recommending you check that out. Edgewise is an MC from our hometown of San Jose who now resides in Oakland. And he's just a deep lyrical cat and someone we're proud to kind of be able to put on, and the Needle to the Groove guys helped put this project together, and we hope you all check it out. I know there's a lot of media content out there right now, but these guys just had their rollout just completely botched by the situation going on in the world, and while that seems like a small thing and it's affecting pretty much every artist in the world, we're just trying to do our part to spread the word about this great EP, Apatheater. Check it out, Bandcamp, tomorrow, Friday, the 20th, Bandcamp is not taking their cut. All the proceeds will be going directly to the artists and labels, so that's a great way to support. We'd love it if you'd click buy on that. And since this is evergreen content, of course, you can click it anytime. But yeah, check out this interview. We did it in my living room last week. And again, it seemed like it took place in a different world. I probably wouldn't have guests over right now, especially if I, you know, didn't really know where they had been and who they'd been in contact with. And it's weird to have to think of it like that. But
the shit was beginning to hit the fan in terms of, I think that day they announced Tom Hanks had coronavirus and the NBA season was canceled, and I was already freaking out. But they were doing their record release show that night, and they came by the crib and we recorded this interview. So check it out, and please check out the Apatheater EP.
Dad Bod Rap Pod. We are here on a gorgeous Wednesday evening with DJ Plattern and MC Edgewise. We are here and we're very excited to talk about their new latest release off of Needle to the Groove Records, Apatheater EP. Gents, welcome.
Thanks for having us.
I'm going to let you speak first every time a question gets directed at us.
Okay.
If that works.
I'll jump right
in. I'm definitely going to be the DJ behind the MC.
All right.
That's perfect. That's perfect. Yeah. Well, you know, let's just start off real quick. Mm-hmm. The album's getting a lot of traction, a lot of really good positive feedback. How does that make you guys feel? Let's talk a little bit about that. Like, what are some of the stuff people have been saying and noticing and, you know, just your reaction to that?
It being out, and I've had listeners of this podcast, let me go ahead and get all the jitters out real quick, probably aren't too familiar with me, but I've been releasing music to not too much like critical acclaim or let alone like listeners outside of my close like group of friends or other MCs in the smaller circuits that I've like frequented. Are probably too familiar with me. So this being released with Needle to the Groove Records has like afforded me kind of a platform where I'm actually getting it towards people that are like listening and hungry for music, that are hearing me with like fresh ears. And this is new to me to get this kind of like fresh feedback from like these kind of outlets. And to me, it's been overwhelmingly positive and kind of hits close enough to the soft spots in my heart where I want them to kind of like, I don't necessarily only want to be likened to other backpack rappers, but it's pretty clear I grew up on backpack rap, even with that's my generation.
Same.
Yeah. So it's a nice comparison to have, and it's an accurate one too. So I'm really happy that they are being made, and two, that there's some like kind of like more like underneath the surface level compliments I'm getting, even in these short like blurbs. So I'm blown away by it because
it's been interesting to hear people say the word refreshing a lot. Like, that's definitely been an ongoing kind of theme with some of the feedback that I've been getting personally. And it's definitely not a backhanded compliment. It says a lot about what people are actually hearing mm-hmm. nowadays. But what that tells me more than anything is that people just like to hear good, straightforward hip-hop shit. And they miss that. Yeah, no frills. Like,
no frills.
Look, dope beat. Dope riff, dope MC, dope voice, just a dope package all together. Like, that's a thing that you just don't really find as much as you'd like to nowadays. Right. And that's what I'm getting. And I'm not taking it, excuse me, in any sort of way as like a, oh, it's just, you know, it's so nice. You know, it's just so nice to the ears to finally hear some good rap again. You know, it's not like that. Like, it really says a lot, like, because cats are not just saying that in one breath and skipping everything else. Like, they're saying that and they're like, yo, this kid is dope. Like, where's he been at, you know? Like, where's he been hiding kind of, you know, feedback. So overall, like, that's the vibe and the reaction that I've been getting. And I really enjoy knowing that I'm providing that kind of service and he's providing that kind of service and the two of us are providing that kind of service because that it's needed. It's needed. It really is needed. So
that's a very interesting way of putting that. I guess let's go back a little bit. And can you guys talk about how you met, or if that story is not the most interesting one in the world, like how you first worked together and when you thought like, okay, this is something.
Oh, yeah. We're keeping to that rule. I'm going to go first here. Jump right in. Well, I've known of Plattern before he knew me. Like, I knew you before you knew me. I knew your name. I see your name on stickers at Streetlights. I'd see his mixes in Streetlights. And I was a big, I spent all my money in high school on like CDs because I missed the vinyl, the first vinyl thing. I didn't have tables. My cousin had tables, but I was buying a lot of CDs in high school. So I was dope. Part of that market, which that went up. That was a flash in the pan, right? But I spent a lot of my money on that. So I see his name, and I don't think it's a real whimsical tale. It's really Alan is kind of the liaison.
Dude, that's the thing that was kind of interesting, man. It was kind of a formal business kind of thing.
Well, just to sorry to cut you off. Just to give everybody like a little bit of background. So, I mean, the Platin presented the label with some of these beats. So we've had them. We were ruminating on them for a minute.
Yeah.
And so once we finally heard Peter, it was like, dude, this is kind of perfect. And yeah. To Edgewise's point, I mean, it was sort of like an arranged thing.
Yeah.
But hey, I think the results speak for themselves.
No. So. Absolutely. And it takes a certain kind of ear to be able to put these things together, and again it was pretty formal. Like it was definitely a hey, you need to hear this kid.
Mm-hmm.
We need to be in the same place when I play you his music, kind of thing. Like it was very much like that, in the vein of essentially I'm serious about putting the two of you together mm-hmm. to make something happen. Dope. And so let's really let's dig into this a little bit more. And mm-hmm. so I remember the first time I really actually listened to you was with, I think we were doing a radio show over at Stanford and Albert Jenkins by his PKA name.
Shouts.
Yep.
He that's what he did. Like he took me to the side and he's like, you got to hear this kid. And this is who we're thinking of, as far as this project goes. And I mean, that was a little while ago, but again, this is hip hop. So it just kind of works organically. So
yeah. And just to jump in, like I said, like I knew who this man was already. And I'm like I was a scratch nerd growing up, like turntablist. So like, Oakland Faders to me was like,
yep.
I mean, we had the Faders in the Bay. We had the Pickles on the Peninsula. We had the Bangers in San Jose. So, like, his name was pretty big. So when he was like, oh, yeah, Platin likes your shit, I was like, word? Okay. Well, I was more of like a just shut up and just be in the room. And let things envelop and not get in the way.
Right.
And this is the thing. Like, and I feel like I might have told you this maybe on a drunken stupor or something. But, it takes a lot for me to really get hyped off of vocalists. And
right.
I've been making beats since the 90s and I haven't been a out there kind of producer where I'm like, yo, like, cop my shit or blah, blah, blah. Like I'm in the, I'm not in the mix as far as DJ producer cats go, but the main reason really is because I'm super, super picky about who I fuck with as far as vocalist goes. Mm-hmm. And this was, I mean, honestly, dude, like Edge was, and again, not to gas you up because you're cocky enough already, dude, but real talk, man. I heard your shit and I was like, man, this kid really has something. And that was the other thing I was gonna say is that the stuff that I heard you on, mm-hmm. it was dope. Mm-hmm. But I was like, yeah, this guy needs his sound. Like he needs his appropriate sound bed to fit what it is that he's actually doing with the type of emceeing that you do, the kind of pocket, the kind of, the flow and the cadence and the warmth and the matching of,
I think also another thing that we said was like addition by subtraction a little bit.
There it is.
Like strip it down and then let the voice kind of come to the forefront a little bit, not to do the heavy lifting, but you guys afforded me that. You're like, hey, like we want you to have a platform where you can get your words across.
Right.
Let it, let the beats find the pocket. Or let the rhymes find the pocket in the beat and just kind of, not add too many spices to it.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I mean, that classic hip-hop shit behind you, just flip some samples, make sure the melody's tight, and, like, you found it, dude. Like, you found it with all of it. With all of the tracks, man, that you picked and ended up writing to, you found it. And it was, I don't know, man. The end result, as far as I'm concerned, is it's classic, dude. Like
It's boom bap and bass licks, man.
Yeah, and then knowing that he has a deep, deep catalog to draw from, I'm like, cool. Let's see what he's cooking. Mm-hmm, like, I know it was gonna be, even if it's not immediately appealing to me, like that's not like my wheelhouse. I was trying to get into. Like, I knew the variety was gonna be so vast. I'm like, oh, I'm gonna find something. Mm-hmm. And even if it wasn't something that I immediately gravitated towards, I'm like, this is going to be good to keep in my back pocket so that like when I'm done writing the songs that are obvious to me to write, I'm like, go back to this beat and be like, okay, come up with something.
That's what's up.
Come up with something to match what he's doing. And then also surprised myself, because the only way it's engaging for me is to like write something that challenges me to feel like this is something, like it's a worthy contribution. Because, right. You know, like, why make something that you heard, or it sounds cliche, or it sounds just hella tired, or, you know, like, it has to do something that it's got to feel a little challenging. There's got to be a little, like, bloodletting, yeah, you know?
Especially now, dude, it's like, look, if you're not putting something interesting towards rap music nowadays, dude, it's just like, come on, man. Like, why, like, I have this debate in my head, and yes, this is definitely a dad bod kind of attitude for sure. But it's like, dude, what's really, really the point at the end of whatever it is that you contribute to music, you know, at the end of your life, what's really the point of having forgettable music, like literally something nobody is going to reference to, mm-hmm. you know, later in their life or whatever. Or, yeah, so just, you know, just make quality, just, you know, concentrate on quality. So anyway.
And it is a relatively
did it get too much? All right, I'll get off the soapbox. Yeah.
It is a relatively tight EP, kind of a shorter running time. Absolutely. No frills. Yes. And no so frills. Yeah. I feel like the addition by subtraction theme really carries through in the final product. Plattern, why don't you walk us through a little bit of like how you approached this from a musical sensibility, a kind of a crate digging standpoint, and where you like kind of drew from to help us get to this tight EP?
Okay, so there's a handful of factors. I don't want to get too nerdy about it because it's just, I don't know.
It's what we're here for, dog.
Well, yeah, but it gets long, dude. Like,
I hear you.
So I've gone through phases, man, production-wise, a lot throughout the years that I've been in making beats. One of the big things that I have, so I've lived and I repped Oakland for about 20 years. I've lived outside of Oakland now for close to a decade. I've lived in the Bay, you know, almost my whole life. One thing that's kind of interesting that you come across when you live more on the outskirts of the Bay is that the music that you get exposed to is a tad bit more different than the immediate Bay Area. Mm-hmm. And so where I've lived, which was more up the 80, and I live in Vallejo now, is that you come across, and because I dig all the time, I dig probably almost every other day because I'm out and about doing stuff constantly, and there's a lot of secondhand stores and Goodwills up in my area, and so a handful of the beats, actually probably all but one, I think, were made within the last 3 years. He heard them within the, you know, probably within the first year that they were made, mm-hmm. and then, you know, the rest is history. But anyway, my point is that a lot of the sounds, a lot of the samples that I actually picked out to make these beats were from Spanish records that are primarily, you know, U.S. pressings, but a little bit of Mexico, but it's mostly Spanish music with some funk to it and some groove to it. So, and you know, if you heard the samples, you know, not to go too much, but you know, they are flipped. Like, these aren't just straight up loops. There's really only one sample, which is actually Bar for Bar, which is a, you know, the only really truly noticeable sample for just beat heads and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And I'm not afraid to say it. I'm pretty sure anybody would recognize that it's the Slaughter theme from the JBs. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, it's taken and, you know, flipped in its context to make mm-hmm. it a, you know, something to rhyme to and whatnot. But for this particular project, I guess that's what I'm, you know, kind of trying to come around to answer your question here, is that was really the idea. Is to, I like the idea of taking it back to a little bit of a simpler approach, but really trying to dig as hard as you possibly can for newer source material, to just, you know, embrace the fact that you could still just do some head nodding shit, but there's so much fucking music out there, dude. Right. Like, it's absolutely immense, you know, it really is. And it's not just the music that we find here in our own, you know, blah blah blah. I've traveled enough, bunch of DJs all over the world that still collect records, you know, that we travel all the time, and you're constantly finding stuff and it's not necessarily being used, you know.
Right.
And so that was really what it came down to, is I have been finding a lot of really, really fantastic material more on the outskirts of the Bay Area, and that was probably, you know, 80% of the sound bed of what you hear, you know.
Okay.
Minus like some little drum tracks here and there, but like the melodies and all of that, all of those tracks, that's just like, that's just ill Spanish music. Okay. Dude, I'm finding, okay. You know, yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, one of the tracks we're going to play later is Yada Yada, which is, you know, one of the heavy hitting ones. Pete, can you talk a little bit about sort of your reaction when you first heard that song? And then both you guys maybe just chime in on the making of that, because that's certainly a standout personally.
Oh, yeah. I remember very clearly the first time I heard that beat, my head was hella snapping, right? And then I was like, yo, that's OC's Time Up sample. He's like, no, it's not. I'm like, it is. He's like, no, it's not. I'm like, it is. And I'm like arguing with this dude. He's the one that flipped the fuck. He flipped the sample. I'm over here like, no, I think I was even arguing with Alan about it. Like, yo. But then, okay.
And
yeah.
I was like, who the fuck is this kid?
And then, no vitamins or niacins.
And then I was like, okay, I'm wrong, but guess what? I'm gonna go into my OC bag though. Like, right, I'm right. Still gonna do that. That's where I kind of felt like I wanted to speak with my chest on that one. Right. And the whole time I was writing it, I imagined just like a black white vignette, kind of like just singular sick. Light source, like crowd around me vibe, like head bobbing vibe, as far as delivery went.
Right.
So I guess that was the question. I think I answered it.
No,
yeah, I was gonna go into my writing, but.
Dude, sometimes the inspiration is hella straightforward like that, though.
Yeah,
you know
yeah.
What I mean?
The context obviously diverged a whole lot, but the initial energy and what I wanted to do with, because I mean, your body starts going a certain way, your mouth and your mm-hmm. like your words are gonna follow, you know. So
I mean, the premise of that song, dude, the name of the track is actually called Yada Yada, right?
Right.
And so, you know, if you listen to the song and then you just think about the song title, it's basically like dude talking loud, saying nothing, right? That's a lot of like, you know, that's the premise of it. And on some real, you know, MC Bo shit, you know, you like, you know, I mean, that's what I took from it initially anyway, dude, was like, look, let me call out people that fucking yap and aren't really truly saying anything, you know, at the end. Does it go deeper than that? You want to tell me?
I mean, it does.
Of
but
course,
I mean,
it
that's,
goes deeper.
Like,
you
that's
know,
the larger kind of like larger, symbolic, exactly. Metaphorical yeah. Frame reference yeah. Of it. But,
yada yada
yeah.
Yada. What you getting at?
What come getting on, because it goes. It's like plays a hand with like the money talks theme, and exactly. Then there's like a lot of affluence, but there's this big wealth gap too. But just playing on like the more familiar metaphors, and then trying to just go in detail about the shit we have to live through, the yeah. Shit we see, you know. And I mean. It could be a tired subject. I mean, everyone kind of living in the Bay. It's kind
it's
of
not
I'm
a tired subject if you're living in the Bay, dude, because you got to get up every day and make those
everyday
fucking,
life,
yeah,
you know,
and pay those bills, dude. So,
I mean, that it just kind of just went. I'm gonna slow down. Let the words come out. Like a lot of my writing process does kind of start with just seeing where the pen will go. And it did initially start like that. That's exactly how I felt. Like yada yeah. Yada yada. Like what are you getting at?
Yeah.
Like the talk is cheap. Like what are you talking about? Yeah, like it's a lot of hot air.
Yeah.
And then eventually, you know, I just kind of went deeper into it, and then found that this is kind of naturally what I wanted to express afterwards. But it all kind of kept that same bravado because of the initial inspiration of when I heard the beat, and it immediately made me go like, shut your trap. Like yeah. Shut the fuck up. Yeah, like, what are you yeah, talking yeah. About? Like I don't want to. You know. Like
yeah.
Save it.
That's dope. So when I initially heard the rough sketches of this project, the word that came to mind, especially in terms of your work on it, edgewise, is a torrent of rhymes.
It's that's like, you. That's your words.
Yes,
okay.
That's like
that was stuck with me actually reading that like, back.
But,
okay.
Dave and I often think the same things.
Okay.
So oh, we, so, I oh, might wait, have sorry. Gotten it from him. Yeah.
Oh, so, yeah. Okay. So
yeah. It's guys, just so. Like. It's like the faucet gets turned on when the beat starts, and there's like it's like you kind of need to keep up with it and sort it as a listener. There's a lot going on. Like,
I try not to sound stream of consciousness. Like,
I didn't
try
say
not
that.
To.
Yeah, I didn't say that. I think no worries. It's just it's a lot, but in a good way. Like, I love a lyrical MC. Like, my whole like life is kind of
there's deciphering. There's not that many left, dude. There's really not.
Totally. So yeah. On, sorry, no. White no worries, buffaloes. Man. I guess what I wanted to ask you is like, are you notes app guy, notebook pen guy, Jay-Z style, don't write it down anymore guy? Like, where do you
saying.
Store all of this information, and how are you piecing it together, kind of physically but also mentally?
Yeah, it's kind of been a trial by error assemblage of note keeping, and I started by like just writing in black books because I was trying to get my pen game up, like literally like my hand styles, and I thought that the doper I wrote it, the doper I would say it.
Yeah,
but then you lose a notebook full of raps and it's crushing. Right. You know? So then it's like, oh, I'm going to do a phone thing. And then you don't have to fucking save it to your cloud, and it's crushing. So both ways have their, you know, their major cons. But as it
I'm
stands.
I'm going to buy you a scanner.
Yeah. As it stands, I'm a phone guy just because I'm a Black Mirror, like, in the making kind of dude where I can't get away from my phone.
Right.
And I know how to switch to the app so fast. Like, I can do quick Google reference checks. I can do quick, like, right. fact checking. So it's like, if I'm writing, I'm going to do a quick thing. Or if, like, I know something's on the tip of my tongue, it's like, I know something rhymes with this. If I can pull that reference out of my ass, like,
mm-hmm.
I just know how to, like, go between windows so easily on my phone that it's just, it's the fastest way for me to get it out.
You think that makes you a... Dude, I just had a thought.
I used to do books. I used to, like, before smartphones were the smartphones as they are now,
right.
I had a lot of, like, just literary, like, reference books.
Right.
Like before I really knew what words meant, I pulled, like, philosophers' dictionaries out.
Dude,
just
that's
so I could find rhyming
say,
words, you know? And right. then, like, hopefully this makes sense. I don't know.
No, that's what I was about to say. MCs used to literally read the dictionary.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Totally.
And so I was just curious.
I had a lot of reference books.
Yeah. I was curious if you think that. I don't know. That'd be a kind of an interesting thing to dig into, is if that actually makes you a better MC, or if it detracts or whatever. You know what I mean? To have, like, because we just walk around with this unlimited information in our pockets, right? So
I think, there's that, like, option paralysis thing too, mm-hmm. which
exactly.
sometimes I don't know what
that's
right.
like. That's
right.
the whole
thing. I was
going to
say
exactly.
that. Absolutely.
Exactly. But it's the same thing with making music, dude. Option paralysis
yeah.
is real, dude.
I mean, there's just nothing like, if I can think of something to start a verse, cool.
Right.
Then I have a song. But the thing is, how do you start a verse?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
So if I can start the verse, that's a song. But that's those kind of come few and far in between.
You yeah. do speak from experience, and you do speak from your mind, and you do speak from your heart. And, like, I think, you know, despite whatever phases we go through as a society,
oh, it's corny. If you heard my shit, like, back then, like my community college days,
yeah.
it was. Oof,
yeah,
trying
all,
hard.
All about
very, trying very hard. It rhymed though. Shit rhymed.
Well, you know,
this I do want to hear.
Well, you know, let's sort of flip the script a little bit, Pete. Talk a little bit about some of Plattern's beats and how they hit you. You
yeah.
know how they struck you, and Platt. We'll flip that and kind of just let people know some of Pete's writing. Mm-hmm. You know that struck you when you guys recorded.
Yeah, I appreciate content. I appreciate media. Like, I appreciate the creator, and I can't. I'm one of those people that can't separate the art from the creator. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, there's some artists I can't really fuck with because they've done some things in their life. But there's some art that has greater value to me because of the man who made it or the woman who made it.
Sure.
And specifically speaking of this project, Plattern having that history and me knowing his status, like, in the Bay and his affiliations and the things he started and has continued to thrive, like, I can't separate that from the product.
I'm blushing right now.
No,
that's just how I'm hardwired, you know? So, like, every time I was shown things, and, like, I kind of hinted at it before, like, not everything immediately was like, oh, this is something in my wheelhouse. This is something, like, in my Q zone or what have you. But everything that I heard, it challenged me to go, like, why did he pick this? Mm. Why did this stick out to him? Like, I remember the first time I went to his house, I said something dumb like, man, you're hella tall. That was the first time I saw him in person.
It's undeniable.
Right.
By the way, podcasts are an audio format. He's extremely tall, everyone.
Yo, like, he's like, oh, Alan's telling him, oh, edgewise, man, he's mad verbose and all this shit. I get to his house, I'm like, yo, you're hella tall, bro. Like, but and you go into his...
I never get tired of tall jokes. It's my favorite shit ever.
But you go into his house, the first thing you see... is like his curated library right mm-hmm. there, and the way he's set up the room to sit down and enjoy the fruits of his labor, you mm-hmm. know?
More importantly, for me at this stage, because I'm so many years into what it is that I've been doing, is mm-hmm. My whole thing at this stage is, and I don't, like, shall we transition?
I think it's good. That was natural.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So this actually makes perfect sense because... where I'm at right now as far as making music and what it is that I choose to put out publicly in terms of what I put my stamp on and vouch for is I'm really, really adamant about, I always reference this. It's kind of, I don't know, it's a little corny. Primo has this tattoo on his arm that says reputation is the cornerstone of the industry. Mm-hmm. And I've always just kind of lived by that ethos that if you want to stick around, if you want to actually mean something in the long run, if you, and ultimately it really actually will pay off, is if you stick to a certain kind of mantra and a certain kind of quality and ethos in terms of what it is that you choose to put out into the world. And so I just don't fuck around anymore.
Yeah.
Like everything that I put my stamp on and choose to actually involve myself in is going to be of the quality that I approve of.
Mm-hmm.
And so with that being said, as far as going back to what it is that attracted me about Edge and getting down with him, because like I said earlier, I'm pretty fucking picky about the people that I choose. And it's not like my shit is so hot that I'm like have a bunch of MCs knocking on my door kind of thing. But I have kept a lot of things kind of in the background, on the burner, so to speak, that I just am not always just ready to share with anyone and everyone. You know, I'm going to be a little bit more picky about the process. And so what happened was when I heard Edge at first, when Mr. Jenkins actually played me some of his earlier stuff at first, is I heard something that I think the best way to probably explain it is I'm really attracted to melody. And you know, melody, generally people associate melody with just like a riff that sticks in your head, and that's very obviously true. That's the most obvious translation of the word. But there's a lot to be said as far as MCs go. And again, this is going to sound extra fucking nerdy.
Hey, go on, though.
No, but the thing about MCs, dude, is when they're a complete package, when they have the voice, when they have the pocket, when they have the cadence, when they have the flow, when they have all of those things together, it creates a certain kind of melody.
Right, right.
And so that's the kind of shit that really, in my opinion, is really going to stay, you know, over all of these years. You know, the stuff that sticks, the stuff that, you know, me being a DJ also, like a lot of music, obviously you notice what is fortunate enough to stand the test of time, that doesn't get forgotten. Even if it's not being played in the clubs, it's still being recognized in one way or another, either with a reissue or, you know, somehow reappears on a TV show or something like that. You know what I mean? Like that kind of hip hop generally is focused on something that is really kind of melodically relevant and sticks.
Okay.
And so I just heard that in his voice, man. I heard it. I was like, yo, this kid has a voice and a delivery that can stand the test of time. And I'm a big proponent of that shit, man. Maybe it's because I'm old. Maybe I'm just like, I've been around so far. I've seen so many, or so long. I've just seen so many people come and go, and I just hear longevity in what it is that you do. Like I hear longevity in your voice, and I hear longevity in your message, man. And so, I don't know. You know, that was probably the main thing that attracted me to when I really first started truly listening to.
Yeah,
to what it is that you do as an MC. So
that's dope.
Respect.
We're kind of reaching the end-ish, but I have one jokey question for you guys. I came up with the best possible name for your group, Pledgewise. You rejected it. I'm hurt, but it's all good. I understand marketing.
We have some terrible names.
But
maybe for the, you know, when we need to raise money for the next, you know.
Oh. Once again, we are now
asking for.
That's a good
one.
For the GoFundMe campaign for the vinyl.
Let's talk about Apatheater. Okay. Like, why Apatheater? Where'd that come from?
He chose the name. So
okay,
you
cool.
Answer that.
So that one was just, I don't know. Like, in a way, I'm just a fan of like, I love music, and I've heard. You might have heard something along the lines of there's just like, you know, three notes makes a chord, you know, like a melody is like at least like three notes as well. There's just something about not the three is not that tightly wound into Apatheater, but like certain things just have a combination and you could stumble upon things and it's novel enough for you to remember it. Or maybe it's like immediately appealing enough for it to apply to something. Apatheater just came up in my head. Like you just people do that shit all the time. They just mishmash words, you know? And Apatheater is just one of those that I just had stored away for a minute.
Okay.
And Pledgewise was one of many names thrown into a hat.
Yeah, we went quite a bit.
Yeah.
The hat was full of names.
Yeah.
Aside from just the group names, but also coming up with a name to encapsulate the project was.
I think Pulp Diction was one.
Pulp Diction was, yeah, I was
a fan of
that
one. I was
down
with that
one, I kept going for Daryl and Joe. Did I ever explain that?
Yeah, we talked about it, I think.
Yeah, Daryl and Joe was a B-side to a Run DMC single, right. And it was basically Daryl... Yeah, they were just referencing their own names and whatnot. But for some reason, I thought that was extra fucking nerdy, but whatever. Anyway, go on.
But, yeah, I just thought it was something that felt contemporary. I mean, like, just something a la, like, reality TV, like, the media consumption on, like, social media. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a theater. Mm-hmm. It's a theater. We have theaters in our hands all the time.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, like, but largely we're apathetic or we don't have, like, real visceral responses to the things that we see.
Right, right.
So... I it was almost kind of like a tongue in cheek, like, well, here's something that you won't give a fuck about. Here's a good watch that you won't give a fuck about.
And,
you know?
And dude, it's important to note that when you really, really actually dive into the lyrical content of what it is that you're talking about,
it's
on a bunch of the tracks,
wit's end,
dude,
it's very
appropriate to what it is that you're, you know, the messaging that you're putting out, man.
It's
the lyrics,
like
so.
there's a bravado to like stand up for what you believe in, but mm-hmm. there's also like face with like. Oh, this is going to be met with lukewarm response.
Right, at best.
At worst, just complete like indifference.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, just tepidness for
sure. Yeah, but it doesn't, it's not creatively prohibitive.
Right.
It's just kind of like a natural reflective state that I can't help but find myself in. But it doesn't stop me from wanting to make shit. Like, that's not, it's the validation isn't always why you make it.
Right.
But you can't, you can't subtract that.
Yeah, you can't disassociate the two.
Yeah.
For sure.
Okay.
So it's just a theme that I know I struggle with. I don't want that to be, you know, like the cornerstone of like my whole like career. But, you know, it's something that it's just, dude, I've been doing shows since I was 17.
Right,
you know,
right. 30. Oh. It's rap-athletic.
But I never wanted to, you know, like, it never slowed the drive down. It's like, clearly, like, I've been interested in doing it for my own reasons and interested in challenging myself and getting better. Mm-hmm. Or, in my opinion, sharpening the blades.
Right.
Like, steel sharpens steel. Like, still trying to associate with people that, in my eyes, are competitive.
Mm-hmm.
Competitive rappers, you know, like,
I mean, you come from the battle scene.
Yeah, and I still fuck with Eminem lightweight. You know?
Ooh,
what I mean?
No, just kidding.
And but the thing is, like, I really fuck with Eminem's, like, his own, the way that his self-conscious. What the fuck am I trying to say here? Mm. The way he can talk about his own rapping trajectory mm-hmm. and why he raps,
right.
I'm super sympathetic with. He's like, I'm rapping for the other rappers that care about like these hidden illusions, you know, mm-hmm. like these mm-hmm. sort of like literary devices that we could pull off,
totally.
All while maintaining breath with squeezing syllables in, but like having them have this symmetric kind of like just placement. Like, he's doing that for people that can pick up on it,
yeah.
And I'm one of those people that picks up on it,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. And like, I don't care for, because going back to melody, you know, like he doesn't always meet a melodious, I'm just making up words now. He doesn't always sound really like, his melody isn't always, I'm not too keen on all the time.
Yeah.
But why he does it and why I know he does it, mm-hmm. I'm super keen on.
He's very, very adamant about still proving himself to this day, even with his millions and breaking records and the whole nine, dude. Like, it's, you know,
you can
like
tell.
He's one of the most reputable dudes ever, but he's still so thirsty about the art of emceeing.
Right.
That,
yeah.
You know.
And he knows there's MCs that care about it, and that's the school of thought I came up in. Like, okay. I'm like trying to shit on somebody.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, okay. I always approach the mic and I'm trying to shit on the next man. Like, if you're gonna step on a stage with me, it's kind of my obligation to shit on you.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, I can't leave with my pride and dignity and my balls intact.
That B-boy shit. That's what I'm talking about.
You know, like, and then, but then I, as much as I can, like, I don't just try to come off with like the easy ones, like, yo, I'm the shit. It's like, wow, that's the most uncreative, unofficial shit I've ever heard.
Totally.
Like, if you can't just insinuate you're the shit while also, like, maintaining all these syllables and crazy schemes, then it's like, that's lost on me.
Right. So. Yeah, Nate and I have had this discussion before. It's like, quit using the word philosophy. Just be philosophical.
Hey!
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's right.
So, you know, as we're winding this down here, Just one more time, sort of let people know what you want the listeners to get from this. Because obviously, I mean, this is on like some traditional boom bap shit, but it's fresh as well. And there's a driving energy to it. And let the people know kind of your final thoughts.
You want me to set this one?
Let me go first. I feel like you're going to have a better thing to end on. I'd rather end on him.
Producer.
I'd rather end on him. Beats and rhymes, still make it. You know,
yep.
We're still doing it like that. Yeah. So if you like this, this is a taste. We didn't really have to pull this out of our ass. This is something that is just kind of like natural to both of us.
Dope. So this it comes off like that, man.
You know, like this can be reproduced. This can be the bloodstream to like something for like years to come. You know, like this is just what we're doing. Beats and rhymes. Bong.
Boom. Yeah. Yeah, and if anything, man, maybe, you know, I don't know. I just want to hear dope shit again, dude. Like, I really, at the end of the day, man, that's just where my head is at. I still get inspired, and I'm one of those fucking terrible old nerds that's just like, Kendrick is, you know, he's at least carrying the torch, and, you know, there's somebody out there, but there's plenty of other cats. But the fact of the matter is that, look, the most basic premise of hip-hop is a dope beat and a dope MC, right?
Yep.
As far, or rap music, I should say, not hip-hop, but... another elitist breakdown reference right there. I love it. I love it when cats do that kind of shit. It's not hip hop. It's not rap. It's hip hop. It's not hip hop. It's rap. But really, more than anything, what I really, really enjoyed about actually putting this out, I've done a lot of production over the years. This is the first actual project where I produced from beginning to end, where it's just original beats versus anything kind of more DJ oriented and whatnot. And this cat could not have been a better fit for trying to put, you know, and I mean, again, like we honestly, we could, like, you know how to do, like, you could rhyme your ass off.
We really do this.
Yeah, we really like, we could really, you know, we could keep this moving. But more than anything, I want people to feel like this kind of formula is still important, necessary, and just good for the culture. You know, like it's important.
Refreshing.
Yeah, refreshing.
Well, there it is.
Is there like a can I could pop open right now for sound effect wise? No, it's real talk, dude. Like, just, you know, just let's take it back to some shit, you know.
That's
and I appreciate the fact that you said that there is a little bit of a modern twist, because there is.
Right.
It's not like it's just like straight up 90s kind of shit.
It's not throwback nostalgic.
Yeah. No. There is a little. You know, there's some interesting aspects to it, and if you listen to it and if you nerd out on rap music, like you'll hear what, you know, the kind of more current style and energy that there is to the actual project. But overall, man, just bring it back to that shit, you know?
Beats perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect. There it is. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you again. And Dad Bod Rap Pod, the Amphitheater EP out now.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Peace.
God, brother, you lie.
Yada, 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 what you getting at? All I hear is blahzy, blahzy, blah, blah. No gift to gab. Better luck manana, made a better man's pen and pen. Get Alibaba, profit margins, or whatever, man. Jogging old age on the page, it's carbon dated. Demotivated, knowing your place, replace education. Cause and effect to get complicated. Trying to follow the extent of the constant chaos. They thought they'd pay about that tie-dye convo. Homies, hippies, and nimbies in high-rise condos. Home of the iPad and a Wi-Fi combo. No native can afford a pad in the land they die for and ride for when polarized over an eyesore. That's how you know what the chrome and the nine for. I can't hear the hyenas from a lion's roar. Treated like bottom feeders, reading the design roar. Now what could be the reason that I rhyme for? Wouldn't be, I shouldn't beat the odds for the job I applied for. I've been on my grind since you guys been on grind call. Solo dolo, that low life high horse. Get money, spend money, not your rent money. Invest money, no money like that tech money. Should've got that STEM money, could've been a doctor. Would've been a lawyer, but these people don't talk to. Paralegals with paranoia or the madness. Toll into that green glow up, aurora borealis. Billionaires racing space while they roll the cameras. To return composites of the earth and debate the flatness. Coaching notes to the players, I've been polyamorous. But still open doors, boys, better mind your manners. I've been a tour de force if I tour the planet. Love will be the guiding force till we all enamored. Player by the plier to divide and stand up. The reign of mayor, I admire why they grandstanding. Gun for high, trauma fire, semi-automatic. Trigger decadence, the rhetoric act. It's all bigger than the presidents that don't represent me. Be it dead or alive, let the evidence speak. You see, it's on its own ride if it don't benefit we. I keep a healthy distrust for the wealthy elite. It's like, get money, spend money, not your rent money. Invest money, no money like that tech money. Get money, spend money, not your rent money. Invest money, no money like that tech money. Get money, spend money, not your rent money. Invest money, no money like that tech money. Should've got that STEM money, could've been a doctor. Doctor, 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 doctor.
Hey everybody, this is Brian Reisman, host of the podcast Side Gems, which is now a proud member of the Pantheon family of podcasts. I've been a freelance entertainment journalist for 25 years now, and I often end up in conversations that go off on tangents. Suddenly you're discussing someone's outside passion or hobby, something you didn't know about, and it leads into revelations about their character and about their life outside of their art. I've often had to cut those details out because a story had a strict word count or a specific focus, so here, the entire focus of the podcast is just on their side jam or side jams. For example, Alice in Chains frontman William Duvall spent some time talking to me about reading history, which led him into talking about his public school education and how it was so terrible in high school that he actually managed to get into a private school for free so his life could take a different course. In this series of podcasts, you're going to be hearing my interviews with musicians of all different backgrounds and genres, talking about everything from surfing to collecting antiques to stargazing. I hope you enjoy Side Jams. Please tune in regularly, and I'll have a lot of interesting guests in store for you.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.